Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Spellcaster Media presents.
Greetings and welcome to episode 145 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II, and this is a podcast all about the spookiness of films, theme parks, and beyond. I'm pumped up. I'm excited because we are finally reaching one of my favorite times of year. I mean, there's several of my favorite times of year, but this is pretty high up there because we are going to reveal the top creepy films of 2017 as determined by you, the Creepy Kingdom listeners, who put in the vote. We tallied them up. We're revealing. We're sharing our thoughts. It's all going to happen right in a few seconds. But before we get started, just want to say that I am a special guest on the most recent episode of the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast. I am reviewing Voodoo Donuts at Universal Studios Hollywood. So if you want to know my thoughts on Voodoo Donut, check out their most recent episode, which if you're listening to this sometime in the future, you don't know what the most recent one is. Episode 283 of the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast. You can hear me talk all about donuts. But right now, it's time to talk all about the top creepy films of 2017. Let's begin. Alrighty, the time has come. It is time for to reveal the top creepiest films of 2017. And to help me do that, we have Grant, our old buddy Grant.
Yeah, first time on the show.
Yeah, not quite.
Not quite.
I don't know how many times you've been on.
I'm thinking I'm up to like 9 or 10 at this point.
Probably, but well, then you're all set to help count them down.
Absolutely, let's knock this out.
Let's do it. You know, in case you're unaware, we had about a 2.5-3 week period where Creepy Kingdom listeners could vote out of a list of 10 nominees. And I will say that I nominated the films, so that they're that's for the top creepiest. So.
Yeah. Why wasn't the Boss Baby on there?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that a creepy movie? I know it's nominated for an Oscar.
I don't know. The movie, I will not watch it, but it, the fact that the baby walks around and talks like Alec Baldwin itself is pretty creepy.
That's true, but it's nominated for an Oscar, which makes me intrigued to want to check it out. It's in there for best animated film.
That's called a throwaway movie right there, where it's just basically something to pad it out for Coco.
I guess.
Or whatever Disney Pixar. It's not going to win anything. That's not going to stand up.
I don't know. We'll find out. This is this episode is being released with the Oscars. It's Oscar weekend. So at the time of this recording, we don't know what's going on with the Oscars. But, you know, it's no better time to release this episode than to, you know, be part of the Oscar weekend festivities.
And that's why I'm wearing my tuxedo right now.
Thank you. I wish
everyone
at home could see it.
It's a Louis Vuitton, and I've about $12,000. It's kind of a shame that it's just being used on the couch right now, but it's for no better of an event than the Creepy Awards.
That's right, the Creepy Awards. Yes, only the best, even if you can't see it. And I'm sitting on a diamond throne, ready for a diamond throne full of skulls. I forgot we're at Creepy Kingdom here.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. But anyways, you guys voted, and we're gonna reveal the list and talk about these films that came out in 2017. So I have the list here. Grant doesn't know, so he's just going along for the ride here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's not waste any more time. Let's get into it right off the bat. So this was kind of weird. Last year, every single film got votes. This year, not so much.
Really?
Yeah. So we're going to start off saying, I guess, at the number six spot, that there's four films that got zero votes.
Whoa. Now, that could just mean that they were seen, but they just felt like something else was creepier.
Right. You can only vote for one, unfortunately. That's the way that this works. You can't – it would be interesting if next year if we have it so you could just vote as many as you want. But – that might change the dynamics a little bit. But, yeah, you could only pick one.
Right. That's like saying, if you're comparing boat rides between Small World and Pirates of the Caribbean, you're always going to choose Pirates of the Caribbean, but that does not mean that Small World is absolutely terrible,
Well,
although I would argue that Small World is arguably a little creepier.
Right. I was like, that's all subjective. But, right, yeah.
Right. But, it's an illusion. You get my idea, my drift right there.
Yeah, good, perfect analogy. So, so with that, these films, it's not that they're bad either. This is the top creepiest film. Maybe they're not, they just were not as creepy. These nominations, some are expected, some are a little left field. I'm just mixing it up a little bit here, but, let's just talk about the ones that got zero votes. The first one was Underworld Blood Wars, and that film was not necessarily the most popular film of 2017. It came out way in January, but I happened to love it personally. It was one of my favorite films of 2017. I actually put it as one of my top favorite horror films 2017 for my top films for Nightmarish Conjurings.
Really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I didn't start watching the Underworld series, so I kind of jumped in the middle. And I do enjoy the series, and there were some great characters and action in there. It's more of an action film but it is horror because it's vampires versus werewolves.
Did it make any money at the box office, really? Like, I like I'm not a fan of the Underworld movies in general to begin with. I couldn't get into the first one, really. So it's just kind of a series. But I'm kind of surprised that if it got dumped off in January, that's usually where movies go to die in general.
Right, but I feel like they make one of these like every few years, and they must be making money because they keep making them, and they always leave them. With a cliffhanger. Yeah, it definitely made money. Huh. Out of $35 million budget, it made $80 million. So, you know, it's got its audience. It's not like a huge thing, but it's got its audience.
Then DVD and Netflix and all that stuff, it's making its money there, too.
Yeah,
international market as well.
Yeah, and apparently there's another film planned. So I think just like every few years, they just do another one of these. It makes its audience, everybody's happy, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't even know if that's announced yet. I don't follow that closely. I'm just like, oh, that's coming out. All right, let me go check that out.
Cool.
So I enjoyed them. Or enjoyed it.
even though Underworld, you got zero votes, you have James's heart.
Yes.
So, you know, you have that going for you at least. And Kate Beckinsale.
Yes, you do have that going for it. another one that got zero votes is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which is, you know, definitely one of the year's best films, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I adored that movie.
It is very good, very enjoyable. It just didn't beat the first one, but it's pretty close. I don't know about
they had a better soundtrack, though.
I
like the Fleetwood Mac and the Mr. Brightside, but I don't know if I would consider it to be a creepy film per se. Although, you know, there are a few elements in there. I do highly support anything that has Howard the Duck in it. As strange as this is, Howard the Duck is my favorite Marvel character.
Really? Wow.
Nice. Absolutely. I think that's the greatest Marvel movie of all time is Howard the Duck. And you cannot change my mind on that. And I think George Lucas should actually be more famous for Howard the Duck in Star Wars and American Graffiti. And I'm being completely serious about this.
I'm going to say this. So the Howard the Duck film, which is not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
But it is a Marvel movie. It is a Marvel movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a Marvel movie. It's kind of frowned. It's kind of looked as like this really bad movie. It's frowned upon. And, you know, I guess it was a box office disappointment and all this crap. I saw that film in the theater when it came out. I guess it was 86.
I was 4, so I did not see that in the theater.
So I was 9 or 8 or whatever, and I loved.
So you saw Naked Ducks in the theater.
I did. Oh yeah, the I forgot. There's a yeah. Anyways, no,
a couple spots.
No, I loved it, and it's one of those like. Maybe it just works as a kid's movie or something. I don't know. But I loved it when I was a kid. And I'm always surprised to see that as time went on that it's looked at as like this horrible film. You know, I think it's a lot of fun. Maybe just like a fun kid's movie. I don't know.
I mean, two things going for it are A, Leah Thompson in her little Oh Ducky scene. And just watch that movie and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And then, secondly, the overlords themselves are incredibly creepy.
I don't even remember that.
With the giant creature that Howard fights at the end, and he takes the meat slicer to its tongue.
Wow, I really need to watch this again. I don't remember.
Yes, this movie is this movie gets hyper violent for a kids' movie.
I like that we're spending all the time talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, talking about
Howard the Duck. Well, the reason why I mentioned that is because Howard the Duck shows up for about 4 seconds in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, I know that in part Volume 1. Was he in Part 2?
He was in Part 2. He was in the bar, and he was hitting on people. And Howard the Duck is now voiced by Seth Green, and there are rumors that he's going to be making an appearance in Infinity War, and that this is all leading to James Gunn, who is a Howard the Duck aficionado, doing a new reboot of Howard the Duck that ties into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And I haven't heard anything about that. Well, I've heard. I know that's
absolutely.
I know it's Guardians Volume 3, but I never heard about a new Howard the Duck film.
Absolutely. There is a check out the articles online. James Gunn, who interestingly enough was a Troma director prior to this, you know, who he directed a lot of schlocky movies, which I loved.
And also,
he's got a bigger thing. So
was a horror director as well. He did Slither, which is a great
and,
film.
And Romeo and Juliet.
Yep. And that's why, anyway, I want to really get the trivia going. Lloyd Kaufman from Troma has a cameo in
Guardians 1.
Guardians 1, yep.
But that's why I'm just saying it has to do with the reason why I adore it is because I feel like this is helping. This is setting up my childhood, like a reboot of my childhood favorite. I'm actually looking at a Howard the Duck pop vinyl on my shelf right now.
Wow, I really had no idea all this affection you had for Howard the Duck.
anyway, getting away from Howard the Duck, although I can definitely talk about him for an hour and a half. I thought the movie itself was just really fun, and it wasn't terribly creepy, but it had enough going on with it that it wasn't completely kids friendly.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I it needed a little something else to make it as impactful as Volume 1, because Volume 1 just blew you away, because you know you didn't really know what to expect going into it, you know, and you're just like, whoa, this was really high quality. I guess it's a hard film to follow up, that's for sure. But very enjoyable, and I definitely think one of the 2017's best films overall.
How much do you think they're going to be in Infinity War?
Do you think they're going to be a
little 10-minute? You see, I can't tell because there's so many characters. If they're just going to be like a little 15-minute throwaway gag near the end, or if it's going to be like it could be their show. This could be Guardians Part 3 for all intents and purposes.
I don't know if it's going to be that much that they're that, but from the way that they're found, they seem to be found by. By Captain America, and I don't really know exactly what's going on with Infinity Wars, but I feel like they're going to be in it a lot. I feel like the trailer they left it at the end, because that was kind of the surprise, because it's the first time you're seeing them with all the other characters, but I think we're going to see them a lot.
So they may, you know, that movie may have zero votes from the listeners, but you know, it made a few bucks at the box office and a lot of love and affection.
Yeah, no, everyone loves it. Yay Guardians. All right, moving on to the next one. We're actually going to stay in the MCU.
Okay.
This one got zero votes. I understand. It's not that creepy. It has some really creepy parts, but when you think back at it, you're not like, I don't think that was that creepy. But it's Thor Ragnarok.
Now, I did not see that.
Okay, so you can't chime in on your thoughts on that, but
it's in my Netflix queue. It's just waiting to come. Is Howard the Duck in that at all?
I did not see him in that. I only think Howard the Duck's been in Guardians films.
Oh, well, then that's a hard pass. Then that doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to find any movie he's not in you don't want to watch. No, no, this film, I can't even put it into words. This is a high, high quality film. It's kind of like a Flash Gordon 70s kind of movie. It's so ridiculous and over the top. It's so funny, like genuinely funny. Like I was laughing like the whole movie. I liked it better than Guardians Volume 2, that's for sure. Like it was a very high quality film, and I love the villain Hela. She is. She's probably one of my favorite villains in the MCU, if not my favorite. I haven't figured out who my favorite is. I haven't really thought about it before I just said that. But anyways, but there's lots of creepy, you know, monsters and stuff like that. But it's not that creepy. I just thought I would, you know, throw it a bone and throw it in the mix and see if some people had some love for Thor Ragnarok.
Well, I'm excited to watch it. You know.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Which is interesting because I've heard nothing but good things about it, but yet Thor is one of my least favorite. The Thor series is one of my least favorite series. I did not like the first or the second one, but yet I liked him in the Avengers. I thought he worked really well there. So I've heard that they kind of turned him around a little bit because the first couple movies I found were kind of boring.
Well, I like the first one. It's not – there's elements – I could watch that right now. I like – there's certain scenes. I like the – you know, Natalie Portman and Kat Dennings were in that one. And
So that's the reason why all guys would like that movie.
You're like, yeah, but I thought it was amusing. I thought it was fun, the first Thor. The second one was kind of – that one I definitely agree with you. I thought that was kind of whatever. I don't even remember what happened in it. Like, it was like
– he swung his hammer.
Yeah, I remember – yeah, that. No, but this was like a total – I mean, this is like nothing like the first two films at all. It was – it's so left field. And it's a very – it's exciting, it's fun, and it genuinely is funny. Like it borders on being a comedy. Like how much like you laugh at the film, and I learned that a lot of the film and stuff that was funny was like improv. So they were just they were just riffing, and they were hilarious, and especially
good. I'm glad.
Good.
I was gonna say I'm glad to see that they kind of loosened up a little bit.
Yeah, totally different vibe, especially from the Dark World. I guess that was the second one, I think. But crazy stuff. As funny as it is, crazy stuff happens in the movie, and a lot of stakes for Thor and his where he comes from and all that stuff. A lot of fun.
All right.
Moving on to our last zero votes for being the creepiest film of 2017. We have got Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
What?
Yes.
How did that get zero?
I guess people don't think The Last Jedi is creepy.
I mean, okay, hold on. It's kind of a creepy movie, but maybe they consider just everything else a little creepier. But I mean, come on, the blue milk scene? I mean, that alone is disturbing. Yeah, it took you a second to realize what I was talking about.
Yeah, it took me a second, and then I was like, yeah. And then, disturbing and creepy, you know, we're not celebrating disturbing on this show. That was a scene.
or the Chewie and Pork first encounter.
Yeah.
That was good and creepy right there. And, you know, the scene in the Red Room, that had a lot going on for it.
The Red Room scene is incredible. I love it. And I just want to, as an overall statement, just talk about this with Star Wars and all this stuff. You know, you hear so much stuff and so many people are complaining. So many complaints about Force Awakens and heard so many complaints about The Last Jedi, which, by the way, you know, they're really upset about all you people complaining about it because it made like $600 million at the box office.
In the U.S. alone.
In the U.S. alone.
And I'm gonna go out on a very bold statement and say that the Last Jedi is my second favorite Star Wars movie.
Wow, that's bold. What's your first one?
Revenge of the Sith.
Really? That's your favorite Star Wars movie? Wow.
Well, I mean, at least it didn't say something like Attack of the Clones. No, because the. You get the wonderful scene of, you know, you see the transformation into Vader.
Right.
You get the great scene where, you know, he sees all the youngins just sitting there playing, and then you just see the lightsaber light up, and you know, okay, well, they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, so it's...
He murders youngins. Yep.
It basically excuses the prequels. It gives you what you wanted to see. I think it's a well done movie. And from what I understand, I think Steven Spielberg, from what I remember reading, directed the Yoda fight scene and stuff like that because George Lucas didn't feel comfortable with it.
Interesting. Well, we can move on from Revenge of the Sith talk. That's interesting enough.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying is I really liked it. I like the darker Star Wars movies.
Mm. Well, I was going to say this, though, in general, is that it seems that, you know, it's so very what people want out of Star Wars movies. And, you know, I hear so many different complaints about so many different things. And at this point, it's like, this is what's happening. It's rebooted. This is what's going on. Force Awakens, Last Jedi, like, take it or leave it. And, like, I'm just sick of hearing complaints about Star Wars movies. Like, okay, I understand complaining about the prequels. Like, it just seems that so many people are upset that anything that's not the original trilogy, like, that they just complain about it. And it's like, we can't go back, guys. Like, it happened. Those are those movies. Like, these are new stories.
Like, the thing is, there are so many twists in these new ones that I feel like you're not going to fully be able to judge it until the last one comes out. And then you could see the foreshadowing and all that happening
right
in there.
Sure.
Like, sure. You know, the first Star Wars or, you know, episode 4, it's better once you know the events of episode 5 with Darth Vader's identity and all that. You know, like, once you kind of get that, you can see the bigger picture as to what makes this so great. And I hear a lot of backlash from it because people complain, well, you know, this isn't my Star Wars. I want Star Wars to be the same. Well, they got, you know, The Force Awakens, and that was very much paint-by-numbers of episode 4, and then they complain that that was too similar. They complain that this is too different. It's like, you can't please everybody. All I know is that the new movie Solo just looks terrible. I'll also see it opening night, but it looks terrible. But I will see it opening night.
I don't know. I think it looks fine. I guess for me, I just take it as it is. I know a lot of people get really worked up about Star Wars. I definitely enjoy the films, but I don't need them to be anything. You know, like, I don't need it to be, you know, Empire. You know, like, if I want to watch Empire, I'll go watch Empire. You know, like,
yeah, and it's like, you know, I didn't really like Rogue One. But, you know, I think the thing is about Solo is I think it's being released too soon after this one, so there's not enough time for the hype to build.
Well, we'll see.
You know, there's only a 5-month. And really quick, in defense of the prequels, I think that George Lucas had a whole different plan. There's a theory, a massive theory online that Jar Jar Binks was a Sith Lord, and that if you read the theory, he says the right things, and he actually acts rather evil. And I think he got such backlash over that character that he didn't get to. He was like, okay, I need to tone this back so we can make some money. And I think that was going to be a good revelation.
Hmm.
So I know that a lot of the prequels get a lot of hate because of Jar Jar Binks.
I'm sorry, I can't. We're not having this discussion now. We can talk about this another time. I am not talking about Jar Jar Binks as a Sith Lord. And that because he was so annoying that they decided not to do it. I just can't do it. I can't have that conversation. Anyways, I just want to say I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was great. I look forward to the other film. You know, I mean, I'll check out all the films. You know, whatever.
Of course.
And it's the thing, and I don't even hate the prequels. They're, you know, they're not super awesome, and they don't stand the test of time. But you know, I definitely saw them all in the theater opening day. So it's not like I care enough to check them out. Or actually, I think
I hate episode 2 wasn't very good. That's the only one that I actually hated because it was just nothing happened. It felt like it was the one. It was a long movie, but it didn't feel like anything super crucial to the plot happened. Or there were things that happened, but it could have been a 15-minute recap.
I like the scene where they jump out of the cruisers and
okay. Yeah, I mean, that's fun.
Yeah, there we go. I don't know. That's the only thing that comes to mind. And that and some rolling around in a field and making out.
Wow, this has become the Star Wars podcast really quick.
Well, we're about to wrap up Star Wars after
this. Yeah, the whole scene where he goes to I forget the name of the planet, and he just kills a bunch of kids out there as well. And he's like, I killed the women, the children, all of them, and Padme or Natalie Portman or whatever, Amidala, all of her names, just starts hugging him, and it's like, oh, it's okay, it's okay. It's like, girl, these are red flags. These are serious red flags. But, you know, when you look at the world through rose-tinted glasses, you know, the red flags just look like flags.
I guess. Yeah, rose-tinted. Wow, that's a good one. If you look at the world through rose...
From BoJack Horseman.
Oh, that's the new one there. I haven't heard that one. Those are some movies. But the reason I included them in this is that these, I mean, such a hugely popular franchise, but these are some dark movies, man, and I love it. You know, I think, you know, like, especially in this one, you know, it wasn't quite as dark as Empire Strikes Back or anything, but, you know, it definitely had its moments, that's for sure.
Yeah. I will say, you know, without any spoilers, I'm still trying to figure out how the heck they're going to deal with Princess Leia.
Yeah, because the film ends with thinking that she's going to be a big part of the next one, and she's not. So I have no idea what to expect for the next Star Wars movie at all.
They'll just Rogue One her.
No, they're not. They said they won't do that. Rogue One her means they brought back a character who's the actor had died, and they recreated him with CGI. No, they said they're not going to do that. I remember they said that shortly after. Like a few months after Carrie Fisher passed away, so they will not be doing that because of it. But I don't know, we'll see. Anyways, I think there's a lot more Star Wars coming our way.
On your Facebook wall, you now have your Jar Jar being Sith Lord theory, and it's going to totally poop up bricks. But there you go. But okay. Well, at least you know. Wow, that's, I think, probably the longest you've ever talked about Jar Jar Binks on this podcast.
By far. I mean, okay.
Up until this point.
I'll wrap up this whole thing and just say this. You know, I have watched Attack of the Clones many times. Like, under various circumstances. And, I mean, I would... definitely more than the other two films. And it's not like the, it's definitely not, it's to me, it's like, it's not the worst film ever.
Yeah, no, but it's not the worst film ever. That goes, the worst Star Wars film goes to Rogue One, but.
Well, I liked Rogue One. I'm not rating them. I'm just saying what I'm saying is that.
Darth Voorhees at the very end of that one.
that was incredible. Darth Vader at the end of Rogue One, I can't even put that as the lowest one because that was an incredible scene. But Jar Jar Binks is just so unforgivably obnoxious. Like, even when I'm really trying and I'm like, this is like there's so many elements in the Star Wars films that appeal to young kids, and that's fine. You know, Ewoks are funny, you know, and little kids like them too. You know, I think Porgs are fun. Everyone hates Porgs. I don't know why, but Jar Jar Binks is just one of the most unforgivable things in the history of cinema. Like, it is just so... I can't...
I wonder what a Gungan would taste like. You know, it would probably be like a cross between, like, frog and pork, if I had to guess. I mean, like, I'm just saying, you know, he's amphibious, so there's going to be some meat on him. I'm actually wearing a Star Wars shirt right now. It's Han Solo, but he looks like Tommy Wiseau, and it says, "You're tearing me apart, Leia."
On that note, we're going to finally get to the films that got votes. As we're halfway in to the, or no, half an hour into this episode.
James, you had me on. You know that we can't go under an hour.
Yeah, I know. This I tried. I was optimistic about it. But anyways, I don't know. Well, you know, I'm sure everyone loves listening. I like listening to long podcasts myself, so not of Creepy Kingdom. Yeah, I don't listen to Creepy Kingdom. But anyways, so
I do.
Oh, awesome. All right, so let's get into it.
I'm also a Patreon supporter.
Well, hey. You too could be a Patreon supporter. But anyways, so and I'm not going to pitch right now. What I'm going to do is we're going to talk about the two films that are tied for the number five spot.
Ooh.
With both got 3% of the vote. And the first of which is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
So, meh.
So, Matt, so this is this one you've seen?
Yeah, it's one I saw, and it was very meh.
It was
a movie.
It was a movie. I'll say this. Like Star Wars, people, it seems that everyone loved the first one, and then everyone hates everyone after it. And whatever. I don't know. I really, the second movie, I love. That's my favorite one.
Yes, agreed.
You know, the first one is pretty good, but the second one I loved everything about it, really. Since then, with 3 and 4, yeah. I was kind of like, there was parts of them I liked, but overall I was like, they're okay. You know, like whatever.
Yeah.
This film was the worst. Like, I hate to say it, but it is very creepy. Javier Bardem, I can't pronounce his name right.
Bardem,
yes. Those, and the way that they looked, and the way that they, like, that was amazing character design. I thought they were creepy. I could see why they got, why this film got a vote just for that element of it alone. I guess the thing for me while the film didn't work was that they were hunting for Jack Sparrow, and they were just, he really wanted to get him. But then I didn't really know why. it just like, oh, I gotta go get him. Where is he? Let's go get him. Like, did they ever explain why, or did I miss that? Because I have no idea why.
I just remember I was just kind of like watching it, and my whole thought was like, man, did you really need to put Paul McCartney in there in a really stupid cameo? I get that you had Keith Richards in there because, you know, Johnny Depp modeled himself after Keith Richards, but it's like, right. Okay, so now we have to have a beetle. So are we going to get like a monkey next or
monkeys
or let's get Danny Bonaducci in there, a partridge.
Wow. He went from the Rolling Stones to the Beatles to the monkeys to the Partridge Family. I think your scale's off, but anyways.
Well, you know, I think I love you, so what are you so afraid of, James? I'm quoting the Partridge Family.
Yeah, I know. I don't know any Partridge Family lyrics. I don't know. I don't know how this film did. I think it was a disappointment.
It does. They do well in China. Keep in mind, in Shanghai, the Pirates ride.
Wait, you just cut out. Say that again. You got all weird and robot-y.
It did very. From what I understand, it did incredibly well in China. It does very well in the Asian market, and that's where the new Pirates ride is.
Right, the incredible Shanghai ride. Yeah.
I think honestly that this movie just kind of served as a bridge and. I mean, it's kind of a spoiler alert, but not really. They didn't exactly hide the fact that Will and what's-her-face, Keira Knightley, were coming back
Right. Like, but, you know, they were kind of in the promotional materials.
Yeah, they were the promotional material, but then they were only at the end of the movie. Just to-
yeah, so it almost felt like it was to undo Pirates of the Caribbean Part 4. You know, and like, okay, well, you want everybody back, so here's a way to get them back together and get them signed up.
I feel like they might be setting up to do more films without Johnny Depp. I don't know how that's going to go over. But I feel like that – I think that they want to continue the franchise but not with Captain Jack Sparrow.
Well, there was a scene after the credits which was setting up the next one. And I think they're going to do – hopefully they do a final one with all of them and they can at least end it on a high note. But I don't know. I don't have the highest of hopes just because, you know, you can turn out two good movies and then three not-so-great movies. It kind of, you know, it's the track record's not that great on him right now.
We'll see. This film was very successful at a estimated $320 million budget, which is so ridiculous.
It made
$794 million. That was definitely worldwide because that was not the United States.
Well, you know, I'd like to also point out without getting into like too dark of topics, but around the time that this came out, there had been several things that came out about Johnny Depp that I think kind of soured him to a lot of the American audience.
Oh, for sure. I think it was strategic timing that was going on. Wait, no, that was course. The timing of Alice, actually, what you're thinking about. That was a year earlier. That's when the news came out about it.
You know, it's still meant, it's still in there. You know, in the mind frame of it.
Yeah, so,
Okay.
Well, we can move on from this. I just want to say also that naming this the fifth film, Dead Men Tell No Tales, was the biggest case of phoning it in when it came to a name that you could possibly call a Pirates of the Caribbean film. That is was so redundant to call
Dead Men Tell No Tales. The name of Pirates of the Caribbean 6 so that it already has a name?
No, what is it?
It's please keep your hands and legs out of the boat.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, my other problem with the Pirates movies is that they're just way too long. They're like 2.5 hours. They don't need to be that long.
Yeah, they're an investment.
they're long.
Was this one long?
It felt like it.
This one was like just about a little over 2 hours.
But, okay.
That was that. Moving on to another film that got 3% of the vote, tied for number 5 for the creepiest film of 2017, was Coco.
Oh, I could see where if kids were allowed to vote or if they had access.
Well, they're allowed.
If kids, like, you know, if, like, the 10 and under crowd were actually listening to your podcast and voting, that would have a higher rating because it is creepy as a kid's movie. And it's cheerily creepy.
It's not very dark, literally. I don't mean dark in tone. I mean, like, the color palette is very bright and festive and celebratory.
There's some head removal and stuff like that. I mean, it's a very positive movie. With a couple creepy undertones. There are some creepy parts with the guardians or whatever they were called, you know, kind of doing the stalking where they were kind of sneaking out. But I think mainly because it's a skeleton city, you know. It was nice, you know. It's a shame it didn't do better because I think it had a wonderful, beautiful message. And if only that stupid Frozen short wasn't attached to it, I think it would have actually done better.
Wow. Well, let's the Frozen short. Let's take a free moment to talk about that since we're on the show. Well, I'll just say this. You know, Frozen is a weird thing. So many people love it. Some people hate it. That, you know, the movie. I'm kind of like, I thought it was, you know, it's okay. I don't know. It's whatever. I'm kind of indifferent. You know, I enjoyed it enough when I first saw it. I don't need to watch it ever again. But I always enjoyed Olaf. Like, whenever I think about what I liked about it, it was definitely Olaf. And then they had a Frozen short before live-action Cinderella that was very Olaf-heavy, which I thought was funny. with him creating. I don't know if you saw it, but that was.
Yeah, I saw. You know, it was cute. The problem with Frozen is I actually like Frozen. I think it's got some good messages to it. It's the fact that it's taken over everything at the Disney parks, and it's kind of like they put too many eggs in one basket that it got you kind of sick. It was like when Elmo came out for Sesame Street, it was like, oh, he's a cute character, and then he kind of took over, like, you know, he basically kicked Big Bird and Bird and Ernie out of their own place, you know.
Time has passed, and you know, Elmo's not in the forefront anymore. Or maybe
they had even Anna and Elsa. They took over the lighting of the castle at Disney World, and it's like that's Cinderella's job. You know, it's kind of like they basically kicked Cinderella out of her own castle. I remember when we met Cinderella one time, I asked her about that, and she said, "Yeah, that was the prince who allowed that to happen," and I had some words with him over this one.
Wow, sassy. Yeah. But anyways, figured it really back. So when it came to this short that was played before Coco, most time you go see a short before a film, Disney films, they're short. They're like maybe 5 minutes max, you know. And, you know, and they're always – not always, but, you know, I'd say they're pretty good track record of being entertaining.
Especially on the Pixar-themed ones. Oh, yeah, that was another weird thing. Wasn't Coco Pixar and this – and Frozen is actually not Pixar.
Yeah,
Frozen's
not Pixar,
Disney.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was really weird. But even before Disney films, there have been some great shorts. Like they have the Paper Man short. There's been a few Toy Story ones.
But those were all done by Pixar, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, and some of the Pixar ones have been really abstract, you know, and, you know, whatever.
I think what did it clock in at, 23 minutes?
I was going to say, yeah, it was almost a half an hour, and you're like, and the thing about it is that you're going to start, the movie starts, and there's not even, like, I mean, I knew it was going to be there, but just think about it, if you're going to see Coco, and you're like, what the hell is it? Like, why is this going on for so long? And the main reason you're saying that is because it was so just painfully bad. It just felt like a corporate commercial.
Yes.
You know, and there was no heart in it at all.
Well, the theater in front of me, or the theater by my house, I should say. They actually had to put a sign saying there is a long short. This is normal because people were walking out and thinking that they went into the wrong movie. They were complaining because it was just so long. Now, do you know that was actually intended as a TV special?
Oh, yeah. It feels like a TV special. Then they eventually did put it on TV because that's the thing. It doesn't, you know, it definitely has that quality of like, yeah, it's a TV special. It's not like. It doesn't have like a short film kind of feel. It has like a just a low quality TV special kind of feel, you know. Well, it was hard.
The controversy with it is, I'm sure you probably heard a little bit about it, was that they attached it to Coco because they didn't feel like they didn't have enough faith that American audiences would treat a Mexican sub. You know, straight based in Mexican culture. Well, so they basically said, well, let's go and add Anna and Elsa, and then that'll make everybody want to see it. And from what I understand, it actually kind of did the opposite because a lot of people were like, God, I want to see the movie, but I don't want to have to sit through a 23-minute short.
Right, and opposite effect. And on top of the fact that what's happening in this Frozen short is they don't know how to celebrate Christmas. So they go around town and try to steal other people's way of celebrating Christmas, which is totally like stealing other people's cultures. So it's this total like opposite, like horrible message of like cultural appropriation. And on top of all that, Olaf wasn't funny. Like, so there was no funny Olaf lines.
So the only good thing that came out of that were I thought the little kitties that were in there were kind of cute.
I don't remember that.
There were cats that said mew in one of the songs, and they were wearing like little parkas. You can buy the merchandise at the Disney store. They made them into plushes.
Okay, I'll swing by. Yeah. This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by League of Shadows. This is an Etsy shop that specializes in paranormal and creepy-inspired jewelry, including a Haunted Mansion Parasol Girl necklace. Just go to Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. That's Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. But anyways, back to wrapping up with Coco. I said a few other films here. This is definitely one of my favorite films of the years. Such a high quality piece of art, like this visually stunning, such a great story. And I like the way Pixar takes things that are typically presented in a dark way and shows them in a very light or bright, I mean, not light, bright, celebratory way, you know, like a city of the dead, but it's full of life.
It was like a place that you would want to be. Like, you'd be like, look, if I died and this was where I went, you know what? This wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah. It was.
I just wouldn't want to be forgotten.
Yeah, and that's what the movie was all about. Just not being what legacy you're leaving behind. It really makes you think about your what you're doing here while you're alive. It is quite an impactful film. It is nominated for best animated film. I really hope it wins because I love it, and it's funny because I don't think it did as well as they wanted it to, but they did. It was interesting because the holiday is November 1st, but they released the film
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, and they said, the reason they did that was that they wanted it to be more of a family film and not tied in as a Halloween film.
I think their other misstep with it is, honestly, the movie's title is really dumb.
Yeah, it doesn't really let you know what you're getting into. it's I don't know if dumb is the word, but it's not like it's not exciting thing. It doesn't explain the movie.
it makes sense once you've seen the movie, but it's such a it could have been called like the City of the Dead or something like that, and it would have maybe done better.
Yeah, the name probably into that, but that's Pixar. You know, Pixar, they take risks. They're kind of in a tunnel. They do their own thing. You know, I'm not tunnel. I mean, like a cave. You know, like they do their own thing. They try not to be influenced by outside things, and most of the time they knock it out of the park as far as people liking it, I guess. So I don't know if this was a flop or not. But I don't think it was as successful as they had hoped.
You know, and that's the shame. I'm getting, you know, it seems like there's so many sequels now. And, you know, it's hard to go back to the sequels that are tried and true when you try, you know, when you make something new, it's not as well received. Because, yeah, I'm seeing that it made, you know, only $207 million in the U.S., and only $390 worldwide, and that sounds like a lot of money, but I'm sure that this thing had quite the budget on it. And
where are you seeing that? I'm seeing different numbers here. I'm seeing their
IMDb, but
I'm seeing the total number with domestic and international at $732 million.
But, you know, like, that sounds high, but when you think about all the marketing that you have to do for it, you know, like, the number that you spend, as you know, the cost of a movie's budget, you know, you usually spend about half that in marketing.
Sure. I don't think it was a flop. What I'm saying is that you look at, like the other Pixar films, like Finding Dory or something, and those are just, like, money printing machine.
Pirates of the Caribbean? Yeah, no, I gotcha. or Toy Story, Money Printing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not – if you're putting it on that scale, it's not at that level. But it doesn't have to be. Like, you know, I don't think everything needs to be like that. And I think it's a great film. And I think that it's going to – I think it's going to live on. I think this film has, like, long-term, you know, life ahead of it.
Legacy, which is actually what the movie is about.
Ironically enough.
Is, you know, remembering it. Remember me.
Yeah, so that's – I think Coco will live on forever. We won't forget about you, Coco. Yeah. All right. So where are we here? Oh, we are moving on to our number four of the creepiest film of 2017, bringing in 7% of the vote. We've got the live-action Beauty and the Beast. So did you check this one out?
Okay. Oh, of course. And, you know, it's kind of – it was really well done. And what's interesting to me is they actually – I mean, you could tell they were struggling to fix some of the issues that were in the cartoon. Because now I watched the cartoon movie, you go, well, there's some Stockholm Syndrome going there. The people who got turned in, like all of his servants, you know, like basically had no reason to be turned into dishes just because of a kid's misbehavior. Any 8-year-old or whatever his age was, you know, did not let a stranger in. You know, in today's society, you'd be like, good job for not letting a stranger in the house.
Right.
And, you know, the thing, and also in the, I've gotten into arguments with people about this, but I always felt like in the cartoon that Gaston was more of a an oaf than a villain. You know, in his mind, and if it was a traditional Disney movie, he would be the hero who's coming in to rescue the girl from her captor. But in this one, they definitely made him much more villainous. And hey, Josh Gad was great in it as well.
Yeah. Well, that was a good synopsis of the new one. I'll say this. I'm kind of like, I'm not the biggest fan of the animated film. I liked it when it first came out. I was like, oh, you know, and a lot of the technology was really, you know, blew you away with interjecting computer animation for the first time back in '93, whenever that came out, or '92, I don't remember. But as time went on and I rewatched the film, I'm like, you know, I don't like anyone in this movie. I just realized I wasn't really that into it. So I had like kind of not that high of expectations of watching a live action film, but I thought it was extremely well done.
Yes.
And it did make the plot. It did fill plot holes in the animated film, you know, and I thought that was great. And it fleshed out things, and it made Gaston, you know,
a villain. Like a real villain. Yeah. A real villain. Because you kind of get where I'm going with Gaston, on how he's not really clearly defined if you look at it from his perspective.
Right. I mean, yeah, we definitely had this conversation times before.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, no, and I just think as a – you know, as these, you know, I've talked about it many times on the show if you've listened to other episodes, where the idea of making all these films, animated films, over is not that interesting to me. But they keep doing a pretty good job of it as they go along. I've been really impressed with the actual films.
A live action Rescuers Down Under. Let's do that.
Like I said, the idea of these things are not exciting to me. But the execution has been good. I enjoyed Cinderella. I thought the Jungle Book was excellent.
Yeah, that Jungle Book was phenomenal. I think I actually voted that as my top pick last year for the creepy film of the year last year.
Oh, really? That was yours? Wow. Yeah, it didn't even get a lot of votes, but you helped get some votes. But I thought it was excellent. I was like, wow, this is great. What other films have there been? I mean, the Yeah.
Oh, the Cinderella one kind of stunk.
No, I liked it.
Maleficent. Let's talk. Okay, yeah, you've talked enough about Maleficent.
We don't talk about it again.
I didn't like Maleficent. I thought it was dumb.
Well, I love Maleficent, but It doesn't matter. I'm really not talking about that. I literally left talk. I'm just saying my opinion is that I feel like the idea of doing these films, not that interesting to me. But I've been pleasantly surprised each time. I've liked them all.
I'm stoked for The Lion King. It's going to be great. I know it. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, another film that I'm actually not the hugest Lion King fan either. So, but I'm very. But now that I know Jon Favreau is directing it, same, you know, did the Jungle Book as well, and that the voice cast is incredible. I'm excited to see that one as well.
Or Tim Burton's Dumbo. That'll be crazy.
Yeah, I remember when they announced that. That was a few years ago. And we did record an episode about that. And I still don't know what to expect. A lot of people are hating on Tim Burton these days. His last film, which was on the list last year, the Home for Mrs. Prettygrind's Home for Peculiar Children, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was the Tim Burton I love all the way. There was so many things about that film that I loved. And so I'm not really hating on him. He didn't do Alice in the Looking Glass, so I can't talk to him about that. But he just did the first one.
Circling back to Beauty and the Beast really quick, there was one scene that unfortunately they didn't do, which I was really hoping for, where, in the Beast's wing, they have a bunch of broken furniture. I was really hoping that when everybody gets turned into a human, that they would have shown that, and you would have just seen like torn apart bodies. these were like servants, and then you could have a flashback where the Beast is singing, "Let the bodies hit the floor," like drowning pool.
Yeah, that's on the deleted scenes. But as far as being creepy, I thought there was this design of all the inanimate objects was super creepy, and I walked out of that film being very impressed. I enjoyed it very much. It got number four, so I guess some other people enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I loved it.
All right, moving on. I will give a little bit of spoiler here and say that from this, that is the last Disney film on our list here. So I threw some nominees in there that are a little bit that you would not expect to be on Creepy Kingdom, and they it has paid off, because these next three are, you know, you wouldn't expect to even be on this list, but they're in the top three. So, very exciting news here. So, moving on to number three, bringing in 10% of the vote. And interesting here, you're like, it's number three, 10% of the vote. Another spoiler, the number one film won by a landslide, like not even close. Yeah. So that's why the percentage is so low on these other ones. Anyways, number three is The Shape of Water.
Okay. Yes. In fact, I think I think I voted for that.
That was your vote.
That's my choice. Well, because I had a few movies that I thought were creepier, but they weren't on the list. But I'll tell you that later. But Shape of Water, it was phenomenal. It had some beautiful scenes to it. It just creepy design, and the true creepiness was the way the humans were acting and not the creature.
Oh, for sure. For sure. What's great about this film, I mean, there's so many things, but what's happening with it is that, I mean, like, finally Guillermo del Toro is getting recognition as a filmmaker, and this film got, I believe, record-breaking, could be wrong, but 13 Oscar nominations. Absolutely incredible. Ooh. Including Best Picture, like, and Best Director. I don't think he's going to get Best Picture, but he better get Best Director.
I think it's going to get Best Picture.
You think Best Picture? Wow.
Yeah, I slept through the post. I saw that in the theater, and that was really boring. So, Shape of Water was highly enjoyable compared to The Post and the other Oscar nominees I saw. So, you know what? Shape of Water, go see it. It's still in the theaters.
Yeah, no, it's not on home video yet. It's still fresh in the theaters.
Swim on over to it.
Swim on over to it. There's some incredible visual effects, and it shows the darkness of humans, you know, and it's there's a lot. And if you haven't seen it, it takes place in the 60s, and it's kind of interesting the similarities between the 60s and right now, to be honest. So.
Yeah.
It was
Creepy Kingdom or Political Kingdom.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm not gonna get into it there, but it's there, you know, and it's it's definitely there in the film, and I don't know what else to say about it, you know. I will say this, since it was Creepy Kingdom, hopefully now at this point, Disney will stop messing with Guillermo del Toro and accept his script for the Haunted Mansion movie that they announced they were going to be making 8 years ago. So we're still waiting for to get some. Can we get some pre-production news? Or can we get all right, we've started. You know, getting ready to shoot, you know,
the Haunted Mansion, we're going to shoot in the actual Haunted Mansion, so the ride will be closed for 4 months.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him to do that. I'd want something way more grander than that for the film.
Well, what was cool with The Shape of Water was we got to see the origin of Hellboy's Abe Sapien.
Yeah, you think that was supposed to be?
I don't know, but, you know. He's like half human, half merman. So, you know, you never know if, you know, that'll be a, I don't know. I didn't stick through the credits. I could have been. Welcome to the team.
No, The Shape of Water is not part of a shared universe with Hellboy. And apparently they're rebooting Hellboy, not with Guillermo del Toro, with, the dude from Stranger Things, the cop.
Okay.
I forget his name, but the guy that plays the cop.
Okay, you know what? The Tide Pod commercial guy.
The Tide guy.
I'll give him a total chance, and you know what? I think he could do a good job with it.
Yeah, no, I think he's great. So I think he'll be great.
Great casting.
Yeah, we'll see what. I don't know much about it besides that, so I don't know who's making it or whatever. But I know Hellboy is being rebooted.
I don't want to talk about Shape of Water too much because I don't want to ruin it for anybody. Because it's not, you know, like Beauty and the Beast or a comic book movie where you know you can kind of figure out what's going to happen. It's kind of its own unique thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was out of kind of a loss what to say without getting into it. So, but definitely do yourself a favor and. Check out The Shape of Water.
All right.
If you haven't yet. All right. Moving on to number two. Numero dos. That's 17% of the vote. We've got Annabelle Creation.
Can't even talk about that. I don't even like the guy. I didn't like the Conjuring movie, so this has never been on my radar.
Okay. Well... Oh, I have some things to say about it. I'm not super in love with the Conjuring films. I think that they're good. I think they're solid films. The first Annabelle film, I hate. There's so many plot holes. It's so crappy. It's such a clear ripoff of Child's Play.
And that's where I was with you. And it's kind of like the same thing that, you know, with Underworld. Like, if I don't like the first one, why am I going to say, oh, let me go watch the second one or the third one or the seventh one?
Right. Well, that makes sense. But I see most new horror movies that come out through living with a woman that runs a horror website. So around. So I did see Annabelle Creation, whether I wanted to or not. But I'm talking about Shannon, who is on the show periodically. But she had seen it before me, and she was pretty adamant that I was going to enjoy it. And it was it's made by a different director. It's director of the film Lights Out, and they brought something else to it. So for me, this if I had made a list of my top 10, this wouldn't be number 2 on it. But I definitely thought it was good. It was definitely a vast improvement over the original film, which I hated. I like the concept with the doll. Usually prequel stories are like, yeah, okay, you know, because you're like, you know, this is going to end. Well, you know that someone's going to live because it's a prequel. But to me, I think that this is, especially for Creepy Kingdom audience, it's a PG-13 film. So it pushes maybe some people's boundaries a little bit if they're not into, you know, really intense horror movies, but it's still kind of fun. And just the design of the Annabelle doll is, you know, it's very creepy.
Yeah.
So with that, you know, I'm into it.
You know,
you never see the doll move, which I find pretty interesting.
So it would not make for a good Halloween Horror Nights song then, because, you know, the doll can't move. You just be running through the maze and just seeing the doll just in random spots. They wouldn't even have to hire a scare actor.
Right, just be to sit there.
Just walk through to see the doll.
Now, speaking of which, so I guess I'll go off on a side tangent here. Why not? That's what we do. At Warner Brothers Studios here in Southern California, they had like a very limited Halloween event. They kind of were haunts, but they took it to – it was a little bit different approach. It was called Horror Made Here, and they had a few walkthrough attractions. And one of them was based on The Conjuring. And instead of walking through a house and having scare actors – come out and get you, it was kind of like you go into a room and then chaos erupts around you, like, because it's supposed to be haunted, you know. So you're like in a room, like, for one instance, you go into a kitchen and there's someone's guiding you through the house, you're not just going by yourself, and then all of a sudden all the cabinets start opening by themselves and stuff starts flying around everywhere and stuff, which I thought was a very cool way to do a haunt instead of like just trying to start you on every corner. Yeah. So Annabelle was not in this house, but it was Conjuring related, which is about, you know, ghosts, all that stuff. There was another thing there at this event as well, which I guess maybe I don't want to talk about quite yet. but anyways, I don't have too much else to say about it. I'm sure they're making more Annabelle films. I don't know. I don't really stay up on it. But I like the character. I did hear rumors of them coming out with an Annabelle Child's Play crossover film, which would be pretty – which would make sense since it's such a ripoff of Child's Play to begin with. So ripoff meaning that –
you do, though. It'd just be like – it'd just be Chucky wandering around and then the doll just sitting there.
I don't know. I'd watch it. When I say it's a ripoff, it's because in the Annabelle and original Child's Play that the soul of a serial killer transferred into an inanimate object via voodoo. That happens in Child's Play, and that's also what happens in the in the first Annabelle film. Interestingly enough, that I feel like Annabelle Creation kind of took that and, you know, took that out of the story. So maybe that's not the case. I don't know. Whatever. But another interesting thing about Annabelle, since I never talked about Creepy Kingdom before, is that if you put up – if you look at Annabelle and the way that she has the two pigtails and she has kind of brown hair and a little bit the way her dress looks, she looks – very similar to Anna, from Frozen, or Anna from Frozen.
Oh, hey. I'll just let it go already, James.
Yeah. That's bad. But it's an interesting theory to think that they modeled Annabelle to look like a creepy dead version of Anna from Frozen. I mean, if you look at them side by side, they look pretty similar. I don't know. So
that's just okay. I'll take that. You know, maybe it is Anna.
You know, I don't know.
Maybe she lost. Maybe the wrong guy jolted her heart. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll find out in Frozen 2 hits theaters next year.
Yeah, it's going to be all about Annabelle.
With 7 Frozen shorts preceding it.
Jesus. All right. Well, we've made it to number 1. Somehow. And it's, I mean, we're not even at the 2-hour mark like I thought we'd be by the time we got here.
So. Well, what could it possibly be?
All right, Ed, with 60% of the vote. 60% of the vote. Crushing it with a landslide. The number 1 top creepiest film of 2017, according to you guys, is It. And wow, what a surprise this film was. With this film smashed the box office. Everyone loved it. I mean, I can't think of any person I've heard that has seen the film that didn't have anything negative to say about it. I'm sure if I thought about it, I did. But
an R-rated movie took the top spot in the Creepy Kingdom. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best appeal of this film. I would say I feel like it really didn't need to be rated R. Like, I felt like
maybe for some gore and the language. The language was the thing.
Yeah, I felt like it could have been PG-13. Like, I feel like it wasn't really an R. I mean, there's arguable, you know, that, you know, only thing that's the goriest thing is the arm getting ripped off in the beginning of the movie.
You know, then the weird thing was I saw that in the theater, and I would argue that a third of the audience were in the under 10 crowd because people...
Under 10?
Yes, because people were... With their parents. Their parents were bringing it because they liked it, because the kids were like, oh, this is a kids movie. You know, like, there's kids all over the all over the cover, you know. And I will go into a quick side note where I covered Spooky Empire last year. And one of the panels I went to were the kids from It. And 4 of the kids from It were there. And you would think, like, I was in, like, 1964 Beatles territory with
really?
The number of 10 to 16-year-old girls that were basically just freaking out about these guys, about these boys. Like, it was, I will say, of all the panels, it was actually kind of annoying because every single girl who was asking a question was like, do you, like, have a girlfriend? And then the next girl would get up because it was all girls asking the questions, you know, and they'd be like, so I just want to say, I think you're really cute. But, and then they go into their question. Then the next one would be like, you're just such an inspiration. And I have your poster on my wall. And it was like, oh my, it's like, I felt like I was like in like an NSYNC thing, like back when they were popular.
Wow, that's intense. And you got to think that at that point, the film was not on home video yet. These are all people that had – that went – all these kids, you're right. They saw it in the theater.
And I will say that this – I think it was only like – when I covered Spooky Empire, I think it had only been in the theater for a few weeks at that point. So, you know, like it was intense. And if you – you know, like – it's an R-rated movie, and you have to have an adult with you to see an R-rated movie generally. But I don't know. Like, I don't know how to torrent things. I definitely do not believe in illegally downloading movies, which they definitely could do that. But
yeah, you know, just, I don't know how savvy the young kids are with that.
But get off my lawn. But you know, the number of, you know, people who weren't even old enough to get into that movie on their own, who were just there, it was like, you know, it was like a rock concert. And I think the characters that Steven Spielberg had, Stephen King had written, were just so well defined that everybody could, you know, picture themselves as one of those characters.
Oh yeah, I mean, just my thoughts on the film, just to say it overall, is I thought it was a very high quality film. Like I walked out of that, and I was like, wow, like that kind of. It kind of knocked it out of the park. It was very high quality. I don't think I would put that one as my number one, but
it's in my top three for sure. Well, no, I mean, I have other movies that I had thought were a little creepier, but they weren't on the list.
Well, we'll get to that. I'll let you share your thoughts on that. But either way, I actually don't know which one I'd vote for, actually, out of all these. I never really thought about it. I didn't vote. but I just decided to include it because I thought it was such a crossover beyond just a horror audience. It was kind of a phenomenon, and the fact it was such a coming-of-age story kind of broke the barriers. And that
it had the highest R-rated opening of all time, the highest horror movie opening of all time. So it wasn't just like some little independent horror movie. This thing had legs.
Yeah, I mean, I would have never expected it to be this huge. So they did everything right with the, you know, with the marketing and about that, and then with the actual execution of the film, it was so good. And Pennywise is such a great character in the way that they incorporated several things, you know. I think a lot of the film's success also ties in with, you know, the television series that is heavily influenced by it, which we just brought up recently, which is Stranger Things.
I'm sure you own it. I own it. Oh, Stranger Things. I was thinking of the miniseries, the original miniseries.
No. I meant YA.
Stranger Things. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one they share a cast member, but I, you know, clearly Stranger Things is so influenced, I mean, by 80s stuff, and this is a you can see this is a huge part of it, you know. I think there's all that stuff kind of tied together and made this like massive unstoppable hit film, and you take Pennywise out of it, and you still have a pretty solid film in general.
You have Stand By Me. You have the next.
You have Stand By Me. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like
so. Everybody loves a clown. So why don't you?
Very awesome. The thing I was going to bring up also was that at this Warner Brothers thing, they had a walkthrough experience. This is something they had originally for free in Hollywood for about a month, but you had to sign up ahead of time, and the signups was completely booked within like a day. And it essentially was an It haunt. Not so much haunt jumping out at you, but like I said, the way that they build these haunts are more of like going to a room and, you know, crazy things start to happen. And it was and being able to go through I didn't do it when it was on Hollywood, but they brought it to Warner Brothers Studio for this for the Horror Made Here experience, and it was so cool to be able to be in a room. One of the scenes they recreated is when the kids are watching the projector, and Pennywise takes over the projector, you know, and it comes to life out of there. That's probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie. And it was very cool to be able to be in a room and have that, you know, recreated.
Huh.
You know, I think their event was very cool. I think they're really onto something. I didn't do an episode on it, so I just want to bring it up. And the year before they did something, it was a lot smaller. So I think they're just going to keep growing it. And I think Warner Brothers Studios might be a major Southern California Halloween contender for, you know, because doing something pretty cool there. And they've got It. They have Nightmare on Elm Street. They have The Conjuring. And actually, the coolest thing, now that I'm rambling about it, was that where all this was set up was on one of their back lots where so many awesome horror movies were actually filmed, and classic movies such as Gremlins, that they actually have they actually have projections of Gremlins in the windows outside the actual house where Gremlins was actually filmed. And Gremlins is like,
oh, neat.
Yeah, so I loved it. And one of my favorite things was that, just because I'm super, you know, nerd, was that in this this set is also where a part of the film Monster Squad was filmed, which is one of my all-time favorite films. So I
love when the mummy's unraveling on the car. It's great.
Well, there's a scene where they I think he actually shoots the mummy.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a shotgun, and right outside of a Burger King. And that's actually right on this back lot. And I actually watched the scene on YouTube to figure out exactly where it was, and then I recreated it and felt it, because that's what I did for fun. But anyways, this It stuff is just an unstoppable force.
And, can't wait for the sequel.
Yeah, and, so in case everyone doesn't know, the book goes back and forth through their childhood and adulthood, but they decided to break it up into two films, childhood and then adulthood later. So that's the end of these little kids being superstars. But there is a sequel coming, and I bet you, if even after they finish this, if this next film was just as big hit as the first one, I bet you they're gonna probably make another one.
It Origins.
Yeah, It Origin. I mean, there's a lot to be explained, but anyways.
I mean, so does this mean if this is number one, 10 years from now or 8 years from now, because you've done these awards a little bit, are you going to put them all head to head against each other and see, out of all the creepiest films, which is the creepy film to rule them all?
Probably not. Well, because the idea of me doing this, because what I used to do on the show was, we used to go through every Disney film that was released each year and talk about it and see whether it was creepy or not. And I just decided that less Disney films are creepy that are being released. Maybe, you know, and this year had a good handful of them, but you know, I don't know. We were just talking about every
Pollyanna.
Movie. Oh, I love that's an awesome movie. I wish Pollyanna would come out. But anyways, I'm like, well, let's just incorporate some more stuff and just kind of celebrate, you know, the kind of movies that we like here at Creepy Kingdom during the Oscar season. You know, these right. By far, these are not the creepiest films ever. Like, but there's a realm that we play in our sandbox here at Creepy Kingdom. We're not going for extreme horror, you know, like we're not going for disturbing, you know, like stuff like that. That's another sandbox. So, that being said, you had some films that were not on the list, some that you would have voted for.
I have four.
Four.
The first one can't really talk much about because it was kind of an independent movie that nobody really knew of, and I didn't know about it until I got on my plane to Paris. It was called Brigsby Bear. And the less you know about it, the better. It's creepy, but for different reasons. I can't get into it. I will say Mark Hamill is in it, and it's really good. And it stars the current guy who's doing the digital shorts. It's produced by The Lonely Island, so Andy Samberg's in it. It's
really?
Kind of a comedy.
I never had heard of this. Brigsby Bear?
Neither had I.
I'm a huge Lonely Island fan.
Brigsby Bear with Mark Hamill and Lonely Island and Andy Samberg's in it. And it's a very dark comedy, and I do not read anything about it. Just I tell you, just get this movie and just watch it, because I watched it not knowing what was going on. And it is, it's inspirational and kind of disturbing at the same time. So,
I don't freaking believe I never heard of this. I'm looking at the synopsis. This looks incredible. The synopsis meaning like, I'm not ruining much, but I'm just saying that it has something to do with a children's television program produced for an audience of one.
Yes. Just watch it, because it's bizarre.
Wow.
You, James, this is like the movie that you've been wanting your whole life that you didn't even know existed, and it exists. So there you go.
All right. That's awesome.
So other nominees I had were, the next two ones were movies that Brittany walked out of because she was too scared. The first one was Split.
Okay. I mean, I don't think it was that scary, was
genuinely disturbing.
But it was awesome.
His performance as James McAvoy was very disturbing. And, kind of a creepy, creepy little character in some spots. Now, the next one I'm surprised you didn't have on there because of the theme park tie-in, which is Kong Skull Island.
Oh, I got something to say about that. It actually does not have it does not have a theme park tie-in because it's Kong Skull. You know, the ride is whatever it's called at Universal. What is it called?
Islands of Adventure.
No, the ride.
Reign of Kong.
Yeah, Reign of Kong Skull Island, right? Whatever it is, it's not this called the same thing. It actually has nothing to do with the movie because that the new Kong movie was made by Warner Brothers, not by Universal.
Yeah, you're right.
So it actually has absolutely nothing to do with the ride whatsoever.
But, you know, and Harry Potter is made entirely by Warner Brothers.
Well, that's all they license it. I'm just saying that the last King Kong movie was made by Universal, and the one and all the other King Kong movies were made by Universal. To Peter Jackson, the one from the 70s, the original. But this new one's made by Warner Brothers. And the ride at Universal has nothing to do with the movie whatsoever. And the new King Kong movie has to do with a shared universe with the Godzilla movies.
Yes, it does.
And I also didn't think it was that good on top of all that.
No, but there were some good creepy little moments.
Yeah, there was. I thought it was okay. I would
argue that there were creepier moments than Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Creepy crawly stuff.
Yeah, a little bit of that, but I don't know. I didn't like it that much. I thought it was okay. And one of the things about it too is the you see King Kong like in the first minute of the film, like you want to build a little anticipation. like come on, guys. But I'm still down to see King Kong versus Godzilla, which I guess is where this is going.
Right.
What's your fourth one?
Now, my personal vote for creepiest movie of the year is called Okja. Okja.
Was that on Netflix?
It was released in theaters very briefly so they could try to get an Oscar nom. But yes, it was. It's a Netflix produced movie. It was shot in half English, and it's got. I'm trying to think of. I believe it's Jared Leto is starring in it, and it's about people. This company that makes these giant super pigs that they're hoping would solve world hunger, but it turns out that they're like the gentlest, sweetest pets, and the family that raised it, they have to give it up, and this girl is trying to rescue it before it becomes meat. And there are some slaughterhouse scenes that are absolutely chilling. And, you know, it's one of those movies that definitely makes you wonder, man, should I go vegan? You know, it's kind of a it makes you think a lot. But, you know, it has you on your seat. It has you on the edge of the seat. And there are some genuine, creepy, frightening moments in that movie.
Wow. Well, way to end on a positive note there. That sounds like a fun time.
But it's preceded by a Frozen short, so we're good.
Okay.
No, it is a good movie, though. I will say I would recommend it just from the standpoint of the CGI is incredible, and it's got an amazing story. And it's kind of cool because it's half South Korean and half United States. So it was like a joint production. So, half the movie you're watching subtitles and the other half you're hearing English.
Oh, interesting. And you can watch that on Netflix now.
I think Tilda Swinton's in it as well. And
yep,
it's just got some really good acting. Yeah, it's a good movie.
All right. Well, out of the ones you said, I'm very interested in Brigsby Bear, to say the least. So,
yeah, it's you know, it's not creepy in like the traditional way. You're just like watching it, going, "This is kind of disturbing."
Yeah, that sounds like right up my alley. But yeah, all right,
yeah, this is way up your alley, James.
All right, well, we did it. We've said it. I'm still really surprised that it just dominated with 60% of the vote. Absolutely insane.
But that was also the one that had the biggest commercial audience other than Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense too.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, thank you for helping me count these down,
Grant. As always, it's a pleasure and an honor. And yeah. I look forward to next time I'm on, whatever that may be.
It'll be something. And thanks to everyone who voted. Enjoy the Oscars, or if they already aired after you listen to it, I hope you enjoyed them. Shape of Water, Best Picture.
And I still think that they were missing somebody in the documentary category.
Yeah, it's a real... real shame that Foolish Mortals was not nominated for Best Documentary. I didn't,
the best documentary in my heart.
I know. I didn't want to have to say it. You know, I'm glad that you did it on mine for me. I couldn't believe it. You know, when you know, I woke up early when they asked the nominations, and I thought for sure we were shooing. Oh, well. I mean... you know, any documentary that you're in, Grant, is the best documentary award in my heart.
Oh, aw. Thank you, James.
All right, guys. Enjoy another year of creepy movies. There's a whole lot coming up, so get ready. You can contact us here at Creepy Kingdom by sending us an email... creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, videos, links to all of our social media, all of our entertainment and review, blog posts, everything Creepy Kingdom, just hit us up at creepykingdom.com. Well, until next time.
I have a girl now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by Olivia Frankenstein. Olivia Frankenstein is an Etsy store that specializes in creepy-inspired enamel pins, buttons, t-shirt, patches, posters, bags, and much more, including their original design, Spooky Mouse Club, a must-have for every Creepy Kingdom citizen. You can check out that design and much more by going to oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com. That's oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com.